Because we'd like to now bring on to Intentional Grounding a man who I believe you've heard a couple of times today, and a man without, the man without whom there would be no ticket, Mike Reiner.
Greetings, men. How are we?
It is always good to hear your voice, so I am perfectly good now. How are you, Bubba?
Doing great. You fellas all right?
Miss you. Other than that, we're okay.
Well, I miss you too, David.
You know, Mike's one of the few people that I've actually seen in the last 9 months, actually face-to-face. Saw you at the very beginning of the pandemic. We sat up before everything shut down, right when downtown was getting really ghostly quiet. That was it was in early March, and it was, we were standing on the corner and looking at things and going, if this is a harbinger of things to come, we are going to be in for a very, very long year.
It's a little different, but I know, yeah, I'm downtown Dallas, and then I was just in Minneapolis a week and a half ago. It was really dystopian. I mean, it really was. Like in those movies where you would walk two or three blocks and you would only see two people in a two or three block span in a place where it's so active. And you guys know downtown Dallas a little bit more than I am, especially you, Mike, but it's just such a strange feeling.
Yeah, it is. And I'm still just not even begun to come to terms with it.
How so? I mean, how are you finding, how are you dealing with it?
Well, I mean, there's not a lot I can do about it. So I guess I've got to reach some sort of middle ground with it one way or the other. But the thing about it is, before the pandemic and before late May and those two or three awful nights where the whole thing just went to hell in a handcart down here, downtown was really starting to happen. It was really starting to blossom, starting to develop. There was a very, very noticeable vibe of upswing in the air. People were down here. They were on the streets at all times, virtually every night. You know, Dallas has always been kind of a weekend town, especially downtown. But there was a lot more life, a lot more activity, and I could hardly believe it. I've always wanted downtown Dallas to really turn into something neat. And for a little while there, it looked like it just might. And then the pandemic hit, the riots happened, and that knocked everything back to square one.
I was downtown a couple of weeks ago. I had to MC an event for the American Institute of Architects. They wanted to do it out of the old Republic National Bank building. The whole thing was virtual, but they wanted me to be there to do it. That was the first time I had spent any time downtown at night in a very long time. And it was I was struck by how empty and quiet it was, because obviously the Morning News building is downtown and the old library next to the Statler. So for several years, that's where I was every day and almost every night. And then to see it so quiet was so it wasn't just spooky. It was kind of weirdly unsettling. So I just sort of wondered, as someone who knew downtown Dallas growing up when it was a vibrant place. I mean, it was weird being back in the Republic Bank building. I hadn't been there in a long time. That was my family's bank. So to have been in Republic Bank Tower under those circumstances was certainly brought back a ton of memories for me, and then to walk outside and realize that it was going to be quiet when I got outside. I wonder for you sort of how your relationship with downtown has been over the last few years of actually being there and what you remember of it as a kid.
Well, what I remember as a kid is when I was very, very young, I got in on the tail end of downtown's halcyon days. My parents didn't bring me down here a whole lot, but I do remember coming down here sometimes at night, and there would be people on the streets, or it'd be cars everywhere, and it really did look like a big city then. And then the rush to the suburbs came about, and throughout the 60s, and especially the 70s and 80s and 90s, it just dried up totally. There was nothing going on down here. It was one of those situations where if you didn't have good reason to be down here, then you weren't down here. There was nothing down here to bring you down here. And then the upswing started. It was a very, very slow roll at first, but more and more you could see the city and the guys who make these calls and make the big wheels roll start to get behind it a little bit. And then in recent years, that had really gained, like I say, it had gained some momentum. And I don't know, having seen that whole cycle come about, to look out there now and see what's going on down there on the streets tonight, as I'm doing, looking right down on Thanksgiving Tower, or the Santander Tower, as it's now known, it's pretty disheartening. I don't see a single person walking around. Oh, wait a minute. There's one across the way over there by the Chase Tower.
Don't you think it will all change? You know, obviously everything goes back to just everybody's aching for that normalcy. You know, I assume that it's going to be interesting to me to kind of see what happens with the office buildings. If there is that rush back to get back to your office or your cubicle after 8 months of working in your sweatpants.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting. I think that there are a lot of businesses and a lot of professions where the entire dynamic of the way they work and the way the operation is structured is going to change. Because I think there are a lot of people who are finding out that they just don't need the space that they have. In fact, it wouldn't shock me one bit to find out that the very space you're sitting in right now, that kind of dynamic is going on.
And that's always been the balance. Yeah. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
I was going to say there may come a day when you know, the ticket and radio stations decide they don't need all that space. They need a studio for the control room, and everybody else can work at home, work from home. And that sounds real neat and everything like that, but as far as fostering life of a major metropolitan outpost, I don't see how that does any good at all.
Can you imagine what the zoo would have been like if everybody had been working remotely? I mean, those stations were built on the camaraderie of everybody being together, especially after hours. I mean, everybody knew each other, hung out together, and played music together and spun records for each other. I mean, that environment would have been, if that's gone, that would be wildly disheartening.
Yeah, the same with the ticket, too. I mean, you talk about a station that's built on camaraderie. There's never been one like that applies to like the ticket.
Right.
And had that been the case when we first started, then I'm not real sure that the thing would even closely resemble what it does now.
Yeah, this is just redefining community. And if you continue this, you're just going to have virtual pockets. You're not really going to have community and build that chemistry and camaraderie the way you're talking about. And downtown, too, that's always been the thing about any downtown center. It's finding the balance between the business sector and people who actually live there and make it their own. You can't, and Dallas just finally seemed to be just about right in that balance. You know, Mike, before you were talking earlier, and we're essentially of the same age. That was it. I mean, Dallas was vibrant during the day, but it was nothing at night because it was just all the corporations, the banks, and everyone went home. And then
but that's not true because it actually had been something at night. It just was
for a while
before you were born. It was when Theater Row was on Elm Street. It's when the Majestic, the Melba, the Theater, the Palace. It was all
sure.
You know,
but then it swung the other way. That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
it's always been in
a
cycle.
There was the dry period of the '60s, '70s. I mean, you could certainly point to any number of things. Certainly the oil.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there were any number of reasons that downtown took a downturn. But the fact is, there was also no reason to think that when people needed space and they wanted to be closer, that they were going to pick a place where they could walk. And I assume, Mike, that's why you decided to move downtown, for a community that was right there, for all your needs, right there, for all the walking and the life that it brought to you and the life that you brought to it.
Well, yeah, that was that was very attractive to me. I like the idea of there being a community where people were all the time, you know, and people didn't just huddle away in their houses. You actually saw them on the street from time to time. I really like that idea. and still do. And we were getting there. We really were. Dallas was really turning into a something probably about as much resembling a real legitimate big city as a remote southwestern outpost possibly can. And then it just all went away. It just all went away, and where it goes now, I don't know.
How different is it for you downtown? Because, I mean, like you say, when you're first here, there's just the energy of being able to walk out whenever you want and kind of bump into people. And if you want to run this errand or go eat here or grab a drink there, is all that basically lost now that, you know, for you? I mean, how different is that?
But wait, before you answer that, though, I do want to qualify it, though, with something. Because I assume you also see a light at the end of the tunnel, too, right?
If I do, it's only vague. It's very faint. I don't think we're anywhere near close to getting back to where we were before the pandemic hit.
So when you look at, say,
and let's not underestimate the importance of the riots in this, too, because that really dealt it a blow. I mean, that was one real gut punch on top of another.
How so? I mean, certainly it didn't last too terribly long. People came back. They came together. It from a distance, and again, from a distance, because I don't live downtown. I certainly worked downtown for many years. It looked like people had sort of come together, that there was a spirit of community that said, all right, look, we know this happened. It's not the first time it's happened. It's not the last time it's happened. Certainly, Santos Rodriguez in the 1970s, mm-hmm. there had been riots downtown. There were riots during the Republican convention in the 80s. It's not like it's the first time, and it's not like downtown hasn't shown a resilience, or the city hasn't shown that it can transcend those brief, intense moments.
Yeah, this seems different, though. This seems a lot more impactful than either of those things, than what happened on either of those things. Now, I don't remember the Santos Rodriguez situation too much. I mean, I remember the story and everything like that. And every time you've written something about Santos Rodriguez, I knew exactly who you were talking about and exactly what you were talking about. But as far as the local reaction to it, I don't remember a whole lot about that. But then again, I wasn't downtown very much back then.
There were riots downtown.
Well, I mean, you've researched this. You know a whole lot more about it than I do. I will defer to you on this.
I think that downtown has always been an experiment. I think the vibrancy, I understand. I don't know how we got all about downtown, because I had so many other things I wanted to ask you about, because pandemic related and all this other stuff. I also, you know, wanted to ask you, how is the music playing? I hear every now and then that you're actually playing a gig somewhere. Are you getting in enough time to do that? Is that fulfilling for you in a way that it was in March, pre-March?
It means a whole lot more now. I enjoy it a whole lot more. I'm more mindful of it. You know, there's no, okay, let's throw the gear in the car, go out, play this gig, and then go on to the next one. I guess I stopped to smell the roses a little bit more now than I did, and enjoy the moment and be in the moment a little bit more now than I was. But as far as how often we do it, well, we sat by and watched one show after another get canceled. It seems maybe to be bouncing back some right now, because this last month was pretty normal for us. We played four or five times, and that's about what we would do in a pretty decent pre-pandemic month. But that could be the outlier. We'll see. We'll see what happens in the months ahead as the new year rolls around.
How different is it for you when you perform now? What sort of protocols and the crowds, I know, have to be a little smaller, but how is that handled? And it's pretty consistent on different venues.
Yeah, most of them have diminished capacity. Well, they all have diminished capacity. Most of them, not all, but most are some sort of outdoor or indoor-outdoor situation where you do have space and everything. They observe social distancing. A lot of people wear masks. Some do, some don't. And the capacity is you know, not what it was. It's not full capacity anymore. So it's, you know, it's not like it, again, it's not like it used to be, but we just have to make the most of it. And I'm really proud of our guys because they still get up there and play their asses off, and they seem to be more appreciative of it all too.
Yeah, I sort of, it's funny, you know, we've all spent all this time sort of wondering what means the most to us, what we took, what do we take for granted, who do we miss, what do we miss, where do we miss? I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw a movie in a theater. I can't remember the last time, I certainly haven't seen a show in a venue in a very, very, very long time. I miss wearing pants half the time. I mean, I just find kind of all of it's just wildly surreal, and I assume that playing for you is cathartic, and it is powerful, and it is something that you've loved it ever since you were a kid, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that as well. I mean,
and like I say, I no longer take it for granted.
So do you find that you, look, everybody who starts playing, you play because it's a hobby, you play because you love it, you play because you have imagination, you have rock star imaginations or rock star fantasies. And you were playing since you were really, really young. I sort of wonder over the years, you know, and then you stopped playing for a long time as well. And I've always kind of wondered, what do you get out of it now that you didn't get out of it when you were a kid? And what do you find that was, why did you even get into it in the first place?
When I was a kid or now?
When you were a kid, and then why get back into it?
Well, when I was a kid, I was a dork, and I was looking for anything to make me somewhat popular. I thought that might do it. I had a modicum of talent, so I started playing drums, and I thought that might make me a little bit more popular than I had been, which it did, just a smidge. Certainly not enough to put me on a level with the really cool guys, the football players and stuff like that. But hey, I would have taken anything I could get back then. So that was probably the driving force for me back then. I was just trying to be cool.
Right.
As for this go around, that's a little bit tougher because I hadn't done it in years, and I really, really thought it was over for me, and I really thought I would never, ever do it again. And, I mean, it was almost like I was moved around on a chessboard and suddenly found myself hanging out with guys that, for the most part, I didn't know, that were a whole lot better than me. And the next thing you knew, we were doing something that people seemed to enjoy and people would come and see. And I just said to myself, I guess, look, you've fallen into something really good here. Keep your eyes ahead. Don't look to either the left or the right. And just don't do anything to screw this up. And see how far you can ride it out.
Who was the, that was about 17 who taught years you the ago. Most? I mean, was there an incident or a thing that got you out of it? Was that got you back into it? Or was there a thing? Because I've always kind of wondered why you stopped. You know, certainly there are. Well, I'll ask that first.
Well, there had been a lot of things that gave me impetus to stop doing it. I think what happened was I just started hearing a lot of music that I really couldn't relate to and really didn't like too much anymore. And I wound up playing a lot of country, running a lot of country gigs. That was one of the last things I did. And I got into that, and I found it to be something that I didn't think it was. And I mean that in a good way. But
what kind of country?
Country.
You know, so it wasn't Nash Vegas.
No, it wasn't alternative, yeah.
No, it was hard country, the Western place, and 4/4 shuffles and stuff like that. It was fun. But I don't know, I just reached the end of the line with it, and I thought, look, you got to find something else to do with yourself once you try to get into radio. And so I did.
So what got you back into it this time?
I don't know. I really don't know. it was one of those ideas that I get where sometimes something will pop into my head and it just won't leave me alone. One time I was listening to a Tom Petty song, and this is about the time when cover bands who covered the music of one act were starting to kind of be a thing a little bit. A Hard Night's Day was around.
Back in Black.
Yeah. Some of the other ones that did that same kind of thing. I believe Naked Lunch, who did all Steely Dan, was starting to come around.
The Dead Thing and, was at Dada.
Yeah, the Dead Thing was going on. And that was starting to be a little bit of a thing. And one night, I was driving home from Summer Bash, actually, one year. And a Tom Petty song came on the radio, and I started listening to it. And I thought, well, it'd be kind of neat to have a Tom Petty cover band. It was just a throwaway idea. Well, by the time I got home, that throwaway idea had gone from throwaway idea to, okay, how am I going to pull this off? Right. Who do I know? Is there anybody I know out there that might be interested in doing this with me? And soon enough, I started making some phone calls and talking to guys about it, and it just kind of grew from there.
Had you moved that quick on an idea before? Is that normally how you do it, or do you give it a little more thought before you just, 20 minutes on the ride home and then just launch into it?
Well, the ticket was sort of like that in a certain way, because when we started the ticket, I was hanging out at the Ranger games and stuff like that with Greg Owen Jr. And the more we hung out together, the higher level of dialogue we seemed to have. And I remember one night driving home and thinking, I don't know what it is, but there's something useful in play here. There is something going on in this nonsense that we're doing up there in the press box where we're driving each other crazy. There is something useful in this. There is something that we can take and do something with. So it, there's a thread of a parallel there between the two, I guess. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Me thinking is a dangerous thing.
So look, several people, when I said they were coming on, asked me to ask you about the podcast. Will you be speaking of ideas that were very good ideas? Look, people mishearing you, I assume that is something you're wanting to do again, that you'll find a home for eventually, right?
Very close to it. We are very close to it, and I'll probably be letting everybody know something in probably about a week or so, I'm thinking. But, yeah, I've really enjoyed doing the podcast, and it's just opened up a whole new window for me. And I'm really enjoying it quite a bit, and I really appreciate everybody listening to it, and I appreciate the reaction that it's got. That's really, really neat. And I appreciate you being on there. And, David Moore, your time's coming.
Look, man, I told you this from the very beginning. The fact that you asked me to on the first guest episode was an enormous honor. You're somebody who I've been dear friends with for a very long time and certainly have been a big part of my life for much, much longer. So I did wonder what you got out of the podcast. Because, look, it's not even a year since you retired from the ticket. And it was fairly soon that you were sort of interested in doing something different. But it was, it was to a smaller audience. It was more intimate. And it was a longer format because you were going to spend longer time with folks that you were interested in. I assume that's kind of just what you wanted to do, have conversations with people you knew.
Yes, that's exactly right. It seemed like a format that might be a little bit better suited for me than any other that I'd worked in. And that's certainly no knock on radio or anything that goes on at the ticket or anybody up there or anything like that. Don't misconstrue this. But I started to realize somewhere along the line that underneath everything else, I'm a storyteller. And I need a little bit of latitude and I need a little bit of room to tell stories. Podcasts give you that. Because you don't have people telling you to break on time. You don't have people telling you that, you know, how long you can only go a half hour or something like that. On my podcast, I go as long as I want. Sometimes that's 30 minutes. And with Hanson on there a few weeks ago, we went almost 2 hours. And it was nonstop, too, as you might imagine. So, you know, I've got a whole lot of range, a whole lot of latitude, and a whole lot of space to make it what I want it to be. And that's kind of cool.
Do you consider yourself retired?
I don't know. That's a good question. I guess no, not in the customary form of the word, because usually when guys retire, I think of them as pretty much cutting themselves off from most of the stuff that they used to do and used to know and used to follow and used to keep up with. And I've not done that. You know, I can still talk to you about anything about the Cowboys you might want to know, or what's up with the Rangers and the mess that they're in, and everything else going on in sports. I still do basically a lot of the same things that I used to do.
But I assume you don't miss talking about it, in as much as that when you get in front of a microphone now, it's to be more honest, intimate, and personal about the things that you care about with the people you care about talking about them with.
Yeah, it's a whole...
Did we lose Mike? I was going to say, we were just getting to the nugget of Mike Reiner's truth.
His
and
essence.
We lost Mike. Oh, my God. DJ, we're
going to
back?
Devolve Mike's essence.
Well, we have but a few minutes here, and luckily, I have to say, if anyone's wondering if we're running way too long, the fact is what has been a real benefit here is that there was potentially going to be a football game here tonight, so we were kind of programmed ad-wise for breaks. So actually, if we get Mike back on, we have a few more minutes with him. But look, I could hear, and I think that's why I love the podcast format so much for him, because I could hear Mike tell stories and talk for just hours. There's something of it. I think if you grew up here, Mike Reiner's voice is just a voice you want to listen to all the time.
And I think
we have him back to talk to him, Mike.
Yes, you do.
We were just getting to the core of your essence.
You were going to divulge who you really are, and you dropped.
Damn. That's a tough place to drop.
We were talking about why the podcast is the venue that was best suited for you, best meant for you, because it allows you to talk
tell
to the people.
Tell
stories and talk to the people you care about the things you care about.
Mm-hmm. And another neat thing about it is I can do pretty much anything I want. When I see something out there that strikes my fancy, all I have to do is set about the task of trying to get them on the podcast. Doesn't matter if they're known, but if they've got a story to tell and I find it, then yes, I want to get those people on. We had a guy a few weeks ago on that... One morning I was rummaging through websites and I wound up on a place that I almost never go to, Fansided. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but I wound up there. And there was a story about how Luka Doncic saved this guy's life, because this guy was a mess, and watching Luka Doncic play basketball was about the only thing that kept him going.
It was a hell of a piece.
Yeah, and I was about halfway through it, and I thought, oh, man, I've got to get this guy on the air. So I started rummaging through Facebook to see if I could find him, and sure enough, there he was. And so I sent him a message, and as fate would have it, he is from here. He knew about the ticket. He knew who I was. And so we got him on here in the matter of a few days to tell his story. And that's one of the neat ways that a podcast can work. You know, you don't always have to have a big name. If you've got somebody that can tell a story and you can get that story out of them, then you can have just as good a podcast as you might when you if you had a you know, a guy that everybody knows.
Do you find that there are things, and I guess I'll wrap it up here, because we are coming to the close of Intentional Grounding, but I also did kind of want to, you keep up, as you say, with sports. You could talk about Doncic or the Mavericks or the Cowboys, and certainly have a lot of hot sports opinions about the Rangers. But the fact is, I assume you're just happy not to have to talk about those things, so you can talk about these other things, right? I assume that there are significant stories of your own and others around you that you would prefer to tell rather than talk about the latest trade, the latest interception, the latest poorly played game.
Yeah, it's neat to not be pigeonholed into that anymore. It's neat to have that latitude. I don't mind talking about that other stuff. And there's a pretty good chance that in one of the new ports of call that I'm looking at, that might come about where I would do that with some of their people. But as far as having the latitude to do those other things, yeah, it's great. And that's one of the things I like about it the most, that I'm no longer in that singular little pigeonhole where you're a sports guy. I can branch out to whatever I want, music, you know, anything.
Did you envision this when you retire? I hate to use the word retire, but did you envision this when you left the ticket, or were you just open to, I know I want to do something, and I'll figure it out here as we go along?
I wasn't even that far along the food chain.
Really?
I was more like, okay, maybe something, maybe nothing, but either way, I'm going to be a big boy about this. I'm not going to let it get to me. I'm not going to let not being at the ticket make me crazy, you know? I'm doing this because it's what I wanted to do, and it's going to have consequences, and I've got to find a way to make those consequences work for me. And that's kind of where I was, but the idea of a podcast was floated by me just mere days after the fact. So I don't know. I really didn't get much of a chance to think about it and consider myself like retired in the I guess, traditional sense of the word that we all think about it in, where you're just not doing nothing. Now, I do watch Jeopardy every night, which is something a lot of retirees do.
That's Wheel of Fortune's in there, too.
Are you sipping on an Ensure while you're doing it?
No, I haven't started on Ensure yet. But I record Jeopardy every night, and it's usually about the last thing I do before I go to sleep.
Well, there
and,
are worse
and out of all, the stuff I've done, I've probably watched more Jeopardy than any other single thing.
Well, I hate to leave it there, because I know we could just go longer with that particular facet of the Mike Reiner life story. But, Mike, look, man, thanks for jumping on. And the fact is, the way this season is going, I'd probably like you to be on every week for about half an hour where we talk about things that are not Dallas Cowboys related.
It's at this point. Better than what we usually talk about. So.
I'm sure everyone who's listening will certainly agree.
Everyone agrees.
Well, I'm here for you boys anytime you want me.
Well, thank you, sir. You are, as ever, a Christmas miracle. That's the great Mike Reiner. Mike, we'll talk to you. I'll probably
thank you
text
so much.
You in 10 minutes, buddy. Thank you.
All right. You boys have a good night.
You too. There you goes too. My leader, Mike Reiner. Thanks for being here, sir. That brings us to the end of Intentional Grounding and the end of White Elephant Day, except for the top 10. That's coming up in just mere moments. Is that correct, Killer?
Sorry, Mike was off. Yes. With DJ.